I've got to say quickly, Paul and I have got together for a pint or two after work. I've always had to drive home, and Paul's had to go home to Carol. So neither of us have actually drunk that much, okay? I had a half a mind to say, does anyone actually know who I am here? Because I've been visiting this place once or twice every 1 or 2 years for a while.
Forgive me. Just been asked to do this. Actually, you need to
Okay. So coming back here is sort of interesting. I spent 9 years of my early adult life at West Leederville Presbyterian Church with a lot of people who are here, and it was a very, very rich time for me. And like most things, looking backwards over your shoulder, it seems like a bit of a golden age. I moved away, and it actually took several years for me to stop actually feeling as though I was part of West Leederville Church. In the intervening period, everybody left there and come here, so I was feeling as though I was part of something that didn't exist anymore anyway. And this place has moved on and got its own identity as well. So the very place that I've come from, in some ways, has moved on and I've moved on, and we've both gone different paths, we've turned into different people. But it's interesting to catch up for a couple of years after work and to exchange notes on that. If I have anything to say today, they are notes on conversations that I've had with different people over the years. None of it is new. An awful lot of it has been said here over the last couple of years, and you've listened to the talks on the website. A lot of what I've thought about has been said by Paul or Peter or Claire, who I haven't actually met properly, but I have listened to you speak. And by Michael Wood and by Nathan and different people. So there's nothing new here. I actually think that's a good thing. I'll also be doing the proper speaking thing and saying everything 3 or 4 times. And it seems like I'm going round and round in circles. That's because I am, because that's the way the flow of thoughts has gone, about coming back continually to where we started from and knowing it for the first time. Very broadly, I want to make a bit of a response to Paul, basically about why Dawkins and everyone else is basically a waste of time and a red herring and nothing to get upset about. I want to touch briefly on how in that case can we know anything about God and what do we know about God, and then some implications that I've sort of been trying to tease out in terms of how I live a Christian life, how I do some nasty things like evangelism or whatever, but what problems I'm left with, and really unanswerable questions to tease over. As Paul said, I've been conversing with Paul in this community for many years. And Paul and I have met, and we found ourselves, it seems to me, coming across similar questions at similar times, and perhaps they're questions that pertain to gentlemen of a certain age, even though Paul's 10 or 15 years older than me. Basically, somewhere 2 to 4 years ago, Paul and I were sitting at over lunch at the Masuri Satay House in Vic Park, and we ended up teasing around about, well, okay, this is what we're doing, this is great. How on earth do we know that all this is true? And it seems to me at the time, and I observed it to Paul, though he didn't like my analysis, that Paul and I have come across, we've taken different routes, approaching the similar question in a different way, perhaps coming up with the same answer but with very different means and methodologies. Arguably, it seems to me that Paul's taken a more Protestant view of things, though he does not like the term at all, and me, arguably, more Catholic. I have my own personal meaning of Protestant and Catholic there. Although it is the fact that earlier this year I actually formally entered the into communion with the Bishop of Rome and entered the Catholic Church, joined the Mikkari, splashed across the Tiber, became one with the unseparated brethren, and all that stuff. I actually feel very embarrassed saying that here, because this is Shades of West Leederville. And about 17 years ago, my last conversation with Graham Chipps finished with him fairly politely, but very, very, very firmly declining to officiate at the wedding of Maria and I. Because in his words, as I recall them, basically the theological differences were too great and too many between the evangelical me and us and the Roman Catholic her and them. So I've got a really bit of a guilty sense of having let the side down and you know, gone over the other side and surrendered. We can talk about that later if you like. That's fine. Pardon? If you've got beer, that'd be great. But I've got to drive home.
Okay.
As I said, we've developed different approaches to a similar question of how do we know that all this stuff that we talk about and that motivates us is actually true. Paul's continual response is, I'm a scientist. I'm a scientist. We've got to approach this carefully. Carefully. We've got to have, do the error bars fit around what we know and can this also be squeezed in? My response has been, no, we live within a world shaped by scripture and tradition and within an authoritative interpreting community. I said this to Glenn Brooks over lunch some years ago and he leapt at me and, well, Glenn doesn't really leap, but he fixed a beady eye on me and said, this is postmodernism. And I thought, no, this is actually Catholicity. Catholicity. That which has been believed always, everywhere, and by all who have been touched on by the Holy Spirit about what God is in Jesus. I think basically a response via science and a scientific methodology leads directly into conversation with Richard Dawkins and others. I'm using Richard Dawkins as a label, obviously, but you know, the mob who say, there is no God, it can't possibly be a God, everything you're talking about is wrong, you're stupid, go away. Which I find problematic. My contention is that this path is fruitless and will only serve to lose yourself in the dark forests where there be dragons. It constitutes buying into a materialist rational naturalism by which God can never be found to exist because he has already been defined out of the universe. My answer to Paul's question, how can we know that there is a God? Well, we can't, because it is not true that there is a God. God is not a member of the set of things that exist. Nobody created God. To the extent we think about God as being a big bad, somebody is like us but much, much bigger, who gives us stuff or holds us up, we've actually got it wrong, because God is much, much bigger than that. And he's much, much, much closer than that. He's actually closer to us than we are ourselves, in the words of St. Augustine. Consequently, I couldn't afford a PowerPoint, so I'm trying to respond to Paul with Richard Dawkins. I've been wrestling reading this book for the last 10 years or so, or however long since it was published. I haven't got through it. I find it a frustrating waste of time. I haven't got through this book either, The Dawkins Delusion by Alistair McGrath, but it's a lot thinner and it's easier to skim through. And he basically says much the same thing as I did, that by methodology, by being a materialist, Richard Dawkins has actually written God out of the equation entirely. And I think he's actually written himself out of the equation entirely. He hasn't actually realised it yet. Basic, and that's what this guy says. Connor Cunningham is a philosopher at University of Nottingham, I think, and he discusses in great detail, with lots and lots of footnotes, why Richard Dawkins is a materialist and how that doesn't actually explain the universe to you at all. Along the way, though, there are other people. One of my favourite people at the moment is Herbert McCabe, despite the fact that he's dead. But it makes it easy to keep up with his writing. Because from speaking within the Christian tradition, because he was a Dominican priest and lecturer at Oxford, he can easily respond to the Richard Dawkins take on the world, saying, yeah, God does not exist in that sense. If you're looking for something that exists, you're not going to find God. Because God is bigger than all of that, he's bigger than the universe, he's not going to fit into your experiments in the same way that you are bigger than the universe. You're not going to fit into your own experiments either. By taking the approach, which I believe Paul has done, you can learn all sorts of really, really interesting things about the world, and you can find really interesting things about us and the way we behave, but we don't actually approach the existential consciousness of ourselves that sits behind it, that is the us. And sitting even underneath the us, that's where God is. It's not in itself a scandal to Christian belief, at least not into the greater Catholic tradition of Christianity. Because people have been saying for the last 1,200 years at least that you can't approach God like that. And we ourselves in this community would have discovered that through discussions of a lot of the Christian mystics with the Dark Night of the Soul, the Via Negativa, which basically says that you can only talk about God by what he is not, alongside of talking about the sorts of things that God is. But not in any sense that he's actually describing something that exists. One of the things that McCabe says, that if we were in fact able to find and discover a God that exists out there in the universe, that we could prove, that it'd be there, it would actually be by definition an idol and something that should quite probably be destroyed. Another dead person is Karl Rahner, who wrote some enormously thick books in German with enormously long sentences. Thankfully, he's translated into English, and he also wrote lots of small things. He points out that these idols actually exist also, not only out in the universe, but also, and perhaps more so, on the plane of existence that is in our own heads and hearts, as centres of fascination and worship, as our own personal God that helps us out and gives stuff. Sometimes the true God does us a real favour by kicking that one out, so that in our shabby bereftness we might actually find him again after all. Part of McCabe's take upon knowing God and about the history of people actually learning to know God, going through the history of salvation in the Bible, and in particular looking at the growing understanding of the Jews as the children of Israel, the chosen and peculiar people of the Lord, that they've had the history of Israel, the history of Israel, the church, and us, is of people gradually learning through bondage, rescue, wanderings, conquests, exiled, and a return, that the God who calls them is not an idol, he's not a local deity, he's not a national god, and he's really not one of the gods at all. The slowly unfolding understanding that we read in the Bible, that we celebrate when we worship, is that God is not a deity, he's not one of the gods. He's not one of the things that Richard Dawkins et al. Are trying to smash apart. He's bigger than that. He's closer than that. God is not one of the gods. So in that sense, Richard Dawkins absolutely correct. And so he should receive our gratitude and praise for his insight. Unfortunately, it seems to me that his insight has grown very short-sighted. Short-sighted to the extent that I really don't think he sees himself at all, because he's defined everything into a universe which is material, which he can touch, which he can measure. And in doing so, has actually locked himself out of his own existence. He hasn't really done that. He's carrying on automatically because we're human beings and we actually do exist. But by Dawkins and others' own assumptions, it doesn't have room for their own consciousness. It doesn't have room for us. It doesn't have room for the spark, the fire, the inward fire that sits within us, that we respond to each other, in each other, and that works within us when we pray. As Christians, and within this Catholic, I'm also using Catholic with a small c and a large c. Can you tell, Catholic versus Catholic? You can tell the difference, can't you? Within this Catholic tradition, this universal tradition, we know God through Jesus. We know God because God has revealed God's self in Jesus, in his life, in his death, and his resurrection. And we know it because we've heard it, we've recognised ourselves in that story, and we've lived it, and we've borne witness to it, to each other. What we've seen, what we've heard, if you want to know what is absolutely, ultimately real, what is real, what is really real in the universe, is seen in a man who taught profound truth, who spoke truth to power, who suffered at the hands of the status quo, of the powers and of the people he came to be with. He was killed by the people he came to be with, but he came back. But he came back wielding forgiveness. This is what the world is really like. This is what ultimate reality is. This is what is the substance and the water within which we fish swim. God, as revealed, as the writer of John's letters of John says, God is, if you want to know what God is love, which has shown itself to us by coming down, by being with us, by receiving pain and rejection and suffering at our own hands, has died, has sprung back to life, been brought back to life, and come back to us wielding forgiveness. And it calls us to live lives, to discover ourselves as a new creation based on that truth. The truth that this is what the truth is, that the ultimately real, that God is love, and this is what the universe is really like. My own personal epiphany of this came on the 10th of October 2010, on a Wednesday night, 10th, 11th, 12th, on the 13th of October, which was a Wednesday night. I was in the shed doing something, listening to the radio in the background. It was the repeat of Encounter from the previous Sunday morning, and I'm talking to James Allison, who is a Catholic priest and theologian, who he discussed faith as being relaxing into the idea that God actually likes you. He doesn't just love you. God likes you. He likes hanging around with you. You're fun to be with. And I suddenly stopped, and I ended up sitting frozen, mid-hammer blow, and listening to the entirety of this, because it was suddenly, this is the fundamental gospel. This is what the message of Jesus is. God likes you. He likes to hang around with you, just as you are, and despite the fact that that we continually reject him, basically. I actually have by way of other background, James Allison, he was a Dominican. I don't think he's had a formal relationship with that order for 15 or 20 years or so, because he's also an openly gay guy. And a lot of his work is about relating about how you go ahead being a homosexual person within the realms of the Catholic Church. I find this really, really interesting about him, because he's working out, doing this, what I think is very hard yards, of actually staying within this the circle of the church, rather than chucking it all out, stomping off and making up his own place somewhere else. Which impresses me deeply, because it says that someone is actually taking what he's talking about very, very seriously. The Alison Light wrote a book, a short book called On Being Light, and it's basically about being liked by God. That faith is relaxing into this relationship, relaxing into this knowledge that God likes you, which I find quite liberating and actually quite amazing. And it's something that people have been telling me for a very long time, but I haven't heard that through my own baggage and different things, because I'd actually know that I'm not terribly likable. We could talk for a long time about all the things I've stuffed up and done wrong, but God likes me. And I know that God likes me because God liked me enough to actually come down in the world, walk around, get beaten up by me, get spat on by me, and die by me, but yet to come back, and to come back wielding forgiveness because he likes me. And that gives a very different take on this fundamental thing, this small thing that is the centre of the gospel. It is something that is very easy to miss, and I have missed for a very long time, because we felt we have to tell people that they're unlikable before we can tell them that God likes them anyway. James Allison's general shtick is being influenced by a French guy called René Girard, who Bevan knows because he looks just like him, as someone said, that Michael Harden spoke on middle of last year, and that Michael Woods spoke on a couple of times earlier last year and then the year before, talking about how we basically end up imitating each other through... That's how we interact, by copying people. We end up wanting things that other people have because that's how we actually interact and communicate as people. But Jesus busts that apart because he functions as our victim, somebody we've actually punished, and then comes back wielding forgiveness. Yeah, I've just gone off on another circuit there. Sorry about that. I've got a note to myself saying expand on this point. I'm trying to remember what I was supposed to expand on. Basically, the Christian life is learning how to live in this world on this basis, on the basis that God is graceful, and on the basis of love instead of violence. And there are people in the world that I didn't know existed who actually take that sort of stuff seriously, and they take that sort of stuff seriously within the university academy, in a place where I didn't know that God was allowed to exist. One of the people who's led me a lot is Rose. Put your hand up, Rose. Rose was one of my formative small group people when we did a study on Christian mysticism in about 1980. And I remember standing in the kitchen of my house on a Thursday evening after small group making coffee, and putting to Rose, but how do you respond to someone who says, blah, blah, this is a load of rubbish, you're chasing your father that you were disconnected from, or it's all about expurgating guilt or whatever? And Rose looked at me and said, why would anyone want to ask me that? And I stared at her in a fairly dumbfounded manner and thought, well, of course you have to ask yourself that, because I've internalised that sort of debate so much. By grasping I think part of grasping that God is a God of forgiveness, that God likes us, that God came to us, God suffered at our hands and comes back, that God likes us, is part of sits behind Rose saying, why would I even want to entertain the question? But I've been asking myself all those questions for ever such a long time. Although I do think reading Richard Dawkins is a waste of time because his presuppositions are completely up the spout, that if you even get into serious conversation with him, you run the risk of being led off into blind alleys. I did finally battle my way through his introduction to his second edition, or whatever, in which he responds to some of the criticism that people made of him. Nestled in that was something which actually talked about what his purpose was, that suddenly there was something I could actually relate to about this guy. Because he talked about, and he gave an anecdote about his wife's childhood, that she absolutely hated a school that was doing really, really, really nasty things to her. It was just an awful place to be. But it was only some years later that her mother found out about this and said, well, why didn't you say something? You would have done something different. And Dawkins' wife, said, well, I didn't know there was an alternative. I didn't know I could do anything different. Richard Dawkins sees himself as providing an alternative to people than a particular straw man religion. Which suddenly gave me a way of understanding him, because years before that, I was reading some papers by a guy, a very, very hostile guy, at UWA, one of my old lecturers, and I suddenly thought, hang on, he's got assumptions too. I don't actually have to buy into these assumptions. I'm free to actually take some different assumptions, like Rose did 26 years ago, and build my life on something different, on the idea that God is nice, God likes me. Was it Secret Diary of Adrian Glass also said that? God is nice and he likes you. That's the gospel. God is nice. He likes you. He likes you anyway. He likes you so much that he came down here, got beat up by you, got killed by you, bounced back into life and came back wielding forgiveness. It's another circuit. So I've said that buying into the language of Richard Dawkins is actually buying into a universe in which God doesn't exist. Buying into the church, small c, Catholic church, universal community of people who are responding to Jesus, who came to earth, walked around to us, liked us so much that he actually spent time with us, got beaten up by us, died and came back wielding forgiveness. That's the universe that we choose to live in. And that in that we learn of God, who's actually the precondition of all existence, the ground of all of our being, the thing that is much bigger than all of creation, that is closer to us than we are to ourselves. What is God like? What is reality like? God is a person who emptied himself, who taught radical moral truth, who suffered, died needlessly, without justice, did not hit back, who was then known in the resurrection, and who invites us to do the same. Because God likes us. Seeking to apply scientific method in any of this, in trying to seek God who does this, is seriously broken to the point of not only being contradictory, but it's detrimental to knowing yourself and to actually knowing God at all. We know God by resonating with the picture that God has come to us. God has shown himself what the world is like. As Christians, we know God in Jesus, by definition. And yeah, this is a real scandal. It's a scandal of particularity because I could have been born somewhere else. All of you could be somewhere else. You probably wish you were somewhere else. But the fact is, we are here because we have encountered part of the gospel. We've learned about the God that likes us. And we are living together as part of that, living out that reality, basing our lives on the fact that God likes us, basing our lives on the fact that the fundamental reality of the world is not people fighting one another, competing, bashing people apart, which is basically the underlying paradigm of pretty much all academic discourse today. But we're living counter to that, that the world is really a place where the fundamental reality is God likes us. We belong here, the universe likes us, that which is ultimately real likes us. Settle that three or four times. The way in which we do know God, that we encounter God, is in these circles of conversations that we have. It's not by being scientists with each other. It's by living out that fundamental reality and by recognising this within ourselves. For me, one of the huge insights with James Allis and René Girard is about this fundamental struggle that people have to compete with each other, to get really envious with each other, to hit people over the head, to pick on someone so that we can bind together as a group and make someone else a scapegoat. But the thing that can sit up and take notice is that the real reality that sits behind all of this is a scapegoat that was picked on, that was killed, that was crucified, but came back wielding forgiveness and like his. We learn that by each other. We don't learn it by doing, by looking through a microscope. What we learn from each other is to join in this conversation of this God who likes us. In doing that, we're just extending the tradition that has always existed the last several thousand years, of people who are slowly learning that ultimate reality is someone who likes us. And we live out that by basically telling each other that we only want to show something that we've heard and tell you something that we've seen, that here and there in the world, and here and there in us, is a new creation, something that becomes new. That the fundamental conversation within the church is, come and see this man who's told me everything that I've done. Come and see this man who shows me who I am. Maybe he shows you who you are too. Maybe, yeah, I know that he likes me. He must like you because you're a nicer person. And in extending that conversation, we have a way of actually relating to the world that does not involve hitting people over the head with a stick, saying, you're a nasty person, but it's okay because God has saved you. It's... God likes us, and let's go in together. Which I think forms a much better, nicer form of evangelism. Because as Dave Andrews, in his picture of the church, has said, it's a place with very porous boundaries, centred around someone who likes us. There isn't a circle of ins and outs. It's a circle of people either moving in, moving into that centre. And our basic discourse with other people isn't, come along and be like me, come along and join this group. It's, let's enter in together. Because in relation to God, as shown in Jesus, we are all outsiders. We are all on the excluded other. We are all entering in together to the heart of God who likes us. But the God who likes us in a way that actually shows us every day a little bit more about who we are. I'm going to have to stop there because I've lost three or four threads and things. I've wanted to say something in reply to Paul because it had really seemed to me that he's barking up the wrong tree entirely. One of the things that makes this group very, very precious to me is because there is a circle of people here who have shown me a story that tells me who I am. One of the things that's really important to me is some of the music that I hear and the songs that I sing. And I really want Paul to write more songs about God, telling us his story about God who likes us, rather than telling me about error bars, which are never going to encompass this God who likes us. I think that's enough. I've gone way over time. I'm very sorry about that. Does anyone want me to clarify anything? Any little part? I'll be happy to. Like an hour over a coffee.
Oh, if there's not time, we'll do it over coffee.
No.
Just tell us a bit more about why the word like is important as opposed to love. We're used to hearing the word love alone.
I really don't know. I've asked myself that question, but loving it can be a big thing that you go out and do stuff with. Just hanging around because you're likable is really, it's a bit more homey or something. It says something like that to me. Yeah. I've got a whole... Oh, the basic... No, actually, far more importantly, did you want to say, I can't finish the God delusion, Paul. I have to bring it back to you because all of these other things actually contain the life that and help me to reflect upon this story that we're sharing that is about God who likes us, who doesn't actually feature in all the experiments. Yes, Jenny, sorry.
Do you maintain, I'm into multi-tracking in terms of, you know, have our life that we live in our experience, but there are other tracks going at the same time. Do you maintain a sceptical track underneath there somewhere that says that
you're
based with in terms of, I could just be fooling myself, this could all be just an emotional...
Yeah, and I think, yes, I do. And I think that is actually one of the real advantages, and I think actually it's a necessity of actually living out our faith within the Catholic tradition of the entire Church. To the extent that we isolate ourselves and go away somewhere by ourselves, why do I believe that God is actually going to talk only to me in a way that is different from everyone else that he's spoken to over the last 4,000 years. Living within that tradition and giving respect to some of the ways that people believe God has spoken to them provides a framework and a structure for me within which I can move and work around. If I stand in church every Sunday at least and pray or recite the Nicene Creed, I'm continually revisiting that basic structure, but it gives me a place that I can walk around and think, what the hell does this mean? And maybe this means something else. I formalised my relationship with the Bishop of Rome last year, partly because I basically woke up one morning and recognised that I'd been going to this particular place exclusively for the last 2 years. I'd been that long since I'd darkened the door of an Anglican church where I used to go. And part of the nastiness that I walked away from seemed to me that people were quite happy, or the authoritative person in this place was quite happy to rewrite the creed to make it something that was a bit more acceptable to people. And I tried to explain to her at this time that the strength of having the creed there is at least you can step back and argue about it. And I think that is one of the important values of being part of locating yourself within a tradition of sacred discourse, because that allows you to step back and actually argue about the whole thing while still remaining within the community that's defined by that, I think. I thought you were asleep. I thought you were asleep. Yeah.
I'm just sort of picking up on your point about the meditation from an external point.
Yeah.
Your practice and your own sort of coming from the eternal talking about.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the connections between what you call the real universe, the place where people search those graces and goddesses, and what we see around us?
I don't think I understand the question. Could you expand it a bit more?
I was just wondering, it's part of the problem is that sometimes I think of either side of the discussion sort of polarised and created by cross-cultures.
Yep.
I think there's a danger in that. And I'm just wondering about where those connections are from your perspective and what you're talking about
Yep.
That's a very complex question.
Well, yeah, it's a complex question because it's a complex universe, I guess, that we're trying to understand it. I think the failure of the Dawkins, atheists, whatever, that group, who I'm sure are nice people, so long as they get off their hobby horse, is that they've limited the world to what they can actually they can define by methodology. They've got a methodology that works really, really, really well. It makes cars, it explains why the sun is warm, all of that sort of stuff. But it does so by a universe of little ball bearings, even though they're quantum ball bearings that move around. And they don't allow for... There's no place in that for actually what on earth consciousness is. I think some people have talked about what on earth consciousness is by going into quantum mechanics and weird sort of stuff. And that might be a way of exploring it too. But I think the fundamental problem with that materialist naturalism way of looking at the world is it describes a world that doesn't actually contain human beings very well. It doesn't have the fire that lives inside us sitting before it. A favourite thing... Oh, man. I think so.
Qualitative is about measuring numbers, objectivity. Qualitative is about opinions, experiences, descriptions, subjective stuff.
Yep.
But I actually want to ask a question. You're talking about whether God exists or doesn't exist. What do you mean by the word exist?
I don't know. I really don't. I'm approaching 50, and I wasted most of that time when I was at uni and was free to actually wander around and learn stuff without actually having the need to have a family and take kids to school or whatever and give them braces and things like that. I didn't do any philosophy, and I really wish I had, because I don't understand what it means to what something means to exist. I actually stuffed myself around for a couple of weeks in my applied mathematics degree, trying, at least a full morning, staring at a page, thinking, "Well, how do I know that there is an X?" I don't know what it means to exist, except I think I do, and all of you lot seem to as well. So I don't know. Hi, Rose. Well, not a very good one. And the stuff that actually resonates with my soul isn't being a scientist. It's stuff to do with trying to understand what existing is.
Yeah, but you don't.
I think it's a very nasty thing to say, Rose.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
It's not all that dark.
Indeed. I feel I've been talking for a very long time and going around in circles for a very long time. There's a lot of stuff which I really, really wanted to say, look, this is really interesting. Anyway, God is nice and he likes us. Adrian Plass told me that 40 years ago and I should have paid attention then. Rose told me that 26 years ago. I should have paid attention then. Paul and I tell each other that every now and then. Then we forget. But, yeah, there was stuff that I'd seen and things that I'd heard that I wanted to try and tell you about. And they were about the stuff that I'd read about and heard about with James Ellison, with Girard and his whole mimetic theory thing, which actually comes back to a radical non-violence, which I find inspiring. and a way of looking at the world and the church tradition in a way that I found stimulating and that provides a clear avenue back to stuff that actually changes the world. There's an awful lot of conversations to have within that sort of space. Just by the by, the deacon at the Catholic parish that is my home place now is a very passionate guy who speaks very, very long words and with great passion various times. He spoke at, when I got received into this church formally, he spoke with great passion about contraception and evolution and other bits and pieces that got Paul really, really ropey hot under the collar. He's also, but I finally got around to finding out asking what he did before he retired. And he actually was in the SAS and he lectured people in jungle combat. I guess he still thinks that's a good thing, maybe. I haven't been brave enough to ask the question. But there's this whole spectrum of people under this wonderful umbrella that is the church that is carrying on this conversation. And so long as I think it's important that we continue meeting together to talk about what we've seen, what we've heard, what is this new creation that's opening up within us. I'll go away now. Thanks.